The Sunday Baroque podcast is made possible by WSHU and the Friends of Sunday Baroque. You can find out more about the Friends of Sunday Baroque and find out how to become one yourself by visiting our website, sundaybaroque.org, under the Contact tab. Ton Koopman is a harpsichordist, organist, conductor, and teacher. The renowned Dutch musician is one of the world's most respected experts on Baroque music and historically informed performance practices, and he founded Amsterdam Baroque Orchestra and Choir. He also conducts modern orchestras around the world, playing classical and romantic music. Ton Koopman joins me in the studio to discuss his remarkable life and career in music. Welcome.
Thank you.
So I want to go right back to the beginning. Did you come from a musical family?
My father was a jazz musician and percussionist, and he was, as all people who played jazz music at that time, he was amateur. He had a grocery shop, and his best moments were when he was playing with friends, jam sessions. And at home, I saw and heard sometimes those jam sessions, and I still remember my father was enjoying, as I enjoy music, when he played it. But for him, classical music was not the great thing. For him, Wagner and Beethoven were the great people, and Bach, he didn't even think about it. And so we went completely different side. My youngest daughter is a jazz musician again, so you know the circle is round. And for me, jazz music was not my favorite cup of tea. But so that was the way I got music at home. I became a singer in a boys' choir when I was almost 7. I became church organist when I was almost 11. So I started early and it went on and on. And from the one thing came the other, playing in the Matthias Passion, singing in the Matthias Passion in the boys' choir, then playing basso continuo, and then conducting it yourself. And that was with many pieces of music, not only of Bach, but other composers as well. The same thing.
My goodness, so you are a prodigy, already a church organist by 11.
Yes.
My goodness,
yes.
Like Bach.
I mean, I don't know how good I played, how bad I played, but maybe there was nobody better at that point.
So how and when did you begin conducting?
That was a bit by accident as well. I started my first Baroque orchestra, Musica Antica Amsterdam, in 69. And there, at some point, we did works where it was impossible to play because it was too complicated to get it together. And then I had to stand up or wave my hands to conduct. Then we started working with a choir, which was Philip Herrewegen in the beginning, and later with other choirs as well. And yeah, if you conduct a choir, you have to stand up. In the beginning, I felt it was very strange in front of your colleagues to stand there. And still, till now, I didn't have any lessons of conducting. I just learned it with good musicians, with fantastic music, and trying to do the best I can.
Mm-hmm. Now, you said that Bach is the center of your musical universe. I believe that was the phrase you used. Tell me a little bit about your relationship with Bach's music.
Now, the first contact with Bach was already when I was a boy singing in a choir. We were singing Christmas at Easter, chorales out of his cantatas. There was an organist, an amateur, who played some Bach music, not too much because he was not such a great organist. But anyhow, I was always standing to see him working with hands and feet. And then when I got my piano lessons, I asked, oh, can I play Bach? And my piano teacher said, there's much better music than this, because for him, the piano was not for Bach. And I later agreed to him because that, of course, the harpsichord should be the instrument to play on it. But still, I think at the beginning, when I played Bach on the piano, I put punaises on the hammers just to get the sound of the harpsichord. And already from the beginning, I liked the harpsichord very much. I came in contact via friends whose father had harpsichord at home, so I could play on the harpsichord. And when I got my first harpsichord lessons, it was with Gustav Leonhard in the conservatory, because before it was not possible. I lived in a province town and there was nobody really teaching the harpsichord. And when I got lessons with Leonhard, I suddenly started to see that there was a whole universe around harpsichord playing, about early music, how to perform Bach, that it was not just to play what you think, but try to find out what he thought. Mm-hmm. And Gustav Leonhard was very severe in that respect. So I learned many things from him. And sometimes I was real distant, that I always asked why. And teachers at that time, and I talk about the late 50s, early 60s, were not too interested in the students to to tell them why. They just said, it's like because I said it. Mm. But Gustav Lerner was a bit more open, and he sometimes started to be extremely nervous to find sources. He had little pieces of paper where he had written sources on, and so he started to get his map with all the sources. And I'm certain at the end he liked the student who was asking why, although it was strange.
Are you in the Gustav Leinhardt model as a teacher yourself?
Yes. I learned a lot with Gustav Leinhardt, and I found that next to all my questions I had, that he saw the right sources, and he tried really to be a performer in an authentic style, which is called like that. And the interesting thing is that, of course, I discovered, and he had to discover at that point, that an historical style had different varieties, a different truth. And I was in the beginning not really performing in his truth, because I'm a different person. Mm-hmm. And I always said, but Mr. Leonard, if Handel was playing Bach, it should have been different if Bach played Handel. And for him, Handel was a bad word because he disliked the composer Handel. And so he agreed with that. But for him, to play dynamic on the harpsichord, to play with early thing on the harpsichord, was a new thing. Later, he started to do it himself. So it was interesting that at that point, teachers and students were trying to find the same truth. And we found maybe different truths, but we were all trying to go to the same goal.
Mm-hmm. So you raise a good point. Now, there are many ensembles that will perform Baroque music, Baroque era music on modern instruments, or maybe some combination, you know, modern instruments with Baroque bows, or, you know, or various other kinds of combinations. How do you feel about that? How do you feel about having Baroque era music performed on modern instruments?
I think it would be sad if modern musicians were not able to play that music anymore, because I think the music in the Baroque time, just think only for Bach, but there are many others. I mean, it's such great music that you would miss it if you are not allowed to play. So I'm not saying that you are not allowed to play on the piano Bach. So I hope I don't hear it.
Yeah.
And with modern instruments, I'm one of the people who work a lot with modern orchestras. Almost half of my year, I work with modern orchestras. And I try not only to teach them, but I try as well to introduce them in another world and to say, look, we are so used to play with a lot of vibrato. I used to use the bow for volume, but not to use the bow for beautiful things like a Baroque musician would do. And I give a good example. I was in Boston first time years and years ago with the Boston Symphony Orchestra, and the librarian said, oh, look, we have 12 original bows here. I put them on the piano. I'm certain nobody wants to have it, but it's nice to put them there. And then the concertmaster, he felt it was sad that nobody took it, that he tried one. And during the rehearsal, the bow went through the whole first and second violins. The viola started to think, why not we try it as well? And when I came back the second time, the Baroque bows were already away before the rehearsal started. So I think, and it's the same with Yo-Yo Ma. I was guilty that he played the first time with a Baroque cello and a Baroque bow. And he said, my God, this thing can do something what I can never do with my modern bow. And so when you don't have a Baroque bow, you have to translate things. And of course, at the end, to go to the original is the best. But before going to the original, you have to see that the limitation with your modern bow. And it's the same with a modern oboe, with a modern flute. Baroque oboes do something without thinking already, right? And with a modern oboe, you have to do something to get it in that style. And I saw in my first ensemble, Musica Antica, Musica da Camera Amsterdam, that we started with modern instruments, that at some point it was necessary to go to the Baroque instrument, because we didn't go further and we wanted to go further. Mm. And if you come for the first time with an orchestra, of course it's very new, and so that's good. It's an introduction into a new world. Mm. But I think I'm never the person to bring somebody in an artificial world. I think making music with Baroque instrument, making music with all the known knowledge of Baroque playing and interpretation, is something which is so logical and so normal and so beautiful that normally every good musician will follow.
Mm-hmm. I'm so glad you brought up Yo-Yo Ma, because one of our listeners submitted a question, wanted to know how your collaboration with Yo-Yo Ma came about.
It was a Concertgebouw Orchestra. In the Concertgebouw, they have a series where they give a carte blanche to great musicians. And Yo-Yo Ma was the first to do that. And Martin Sanders, the director of the Concertgebouw, the building, at that point, said, Ton, Yo-Yo wants to do all kind of things. He wants to explore all kind of things. He wants to work with rock musicians. He wants to work with jazz musicians. He wants to work with big orchestras, etc. So are you willing to do that? I said, yes, of course. And I met Yo-Yo in shorts in London in the summer before, just to play through, to talk a bit about. And we liked each other from the very beginning. A good musician, an open musician, a musician who really wants to know and is eager to try things right. And so we liked each other from the very beginning. We played together. There was a harpsichord, and I accompanied him. And then he came to Holland, and he tried for the first time his Brogbo, and he said, "My God, I cannot use this thing. This wild animal is doing not what I want, but it's doing what it wants." And so he asked our cello player, at that point it was Jaap Terlinde, a famous Brugge musician for Brogge cello, "Jaap, can you help me?" And so they sat together for half an hour, and Jaap said he was my quickest student I ever had in my life. So Jody said, "Ah, you do that? Oh, okay." And then he did. And so when he had rebuilt one of his Stradivarius instruments, Jacqueline Dupré Stradivarius, he said, "But the instrument sounds much better with gut strings, sounds much better with Brogge bow. Now I start to love the instrument." And so it was for him an aha erlebnis. He really liked it, and he did his best what he could. And I remember when we did the first recording, and my wife was recording producer, Tini Matol, and we were performing not in equal tuning, but in unequal tuning, Werkmeister tuning. And Werkmeister is, some intervals are smaller, some others are bigger, but none is the same as an equal tuning. And so he played out of tune. And at some point he went to my wife and said, "Would you allow me one day to play out of tune?" And I said, "But why not you sit together with Ton and the harpsichord for half an hour to try out?" And so he sat next to me, "Play F sharp, play E F. Ah, F is high. Ah." And he could do it. Mm-hmm. And so it went like that. And then we started the recording again, and intonation was perfect. So he was a real great, great musician. And then later I met him several times. We did, I think, four recordings together. As well, I meet him several times in America, where he's soloist, and we perform Haydn, one of the two Haydns. Several times we did it already. Mm-hmm. And it's nice, and only what he likes, and I like as well, is that the orchestra can make contrast. The orchestra is not always playing loud, and he has to play louder to be able. But I'm able to get an orchestra of what size? Pianissimo and less. Mm-hmm. And he said, "Ah, oh, I can just relax, I can play." And then the orchestra is saying, "Hey, suddenly we hear the soloist." Mm-hmm. So it's a nice collaboration, and Yo-Yo is always fun to be there. Last time we had a beautiful meal at his house, and my wife especially came because we became friends, and his daughter was cooking. I mean, we had a great time, and so I look forward to the next time.
Hmm. Do you have something lined up?
At this moment, not, but I'm certain it will happen, because the problem is with most of the big orchestra we did already, the two Haydns, mm-hmm. and I'm trying to convince him to do Carl Philipp Emanuel Bach, because there are three beautiful concerts for cello, and I would love to do the A major with him.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we'll hold you to that. I'll be looking for that. I have another listener question. This is a listener named Daryl, and he wanted to know, if you could play an instrument without a keyboard, what would it be and why?
Percussion.
Ah, like your father.
Yeah. It's always in an orchestra, percussion players are looking at me a bit strange, because I ask them to do more. I ask them to improvise. Mm-hmm. They look, but it's not there. I say, who cares? So for me, rhythm is an extremely important thing. I will ask musicians to go somewhere, not to be stuck, but to go somewhere. And if there's timpani, I mean, it works. And now with the Cincinnati Orchestra, we have three percussion players in the fireworks music. I know Handel had only one, but I like to have more. And maybe Handel had more, but we don't know exactly. And just because the rhythm section should be exploding the orchestra, and so we improvise, and it's always depending very much on the real percussion player there, if he or she likes it, and if he or she doesn't like it, I have to write out a part, and I will do, because mm-hmm. I know how to do that, and we'll have fun together.
Yeah. Now, you referred before to your early training in the 50s and 60s, and I'm wondering, what are some of the changes and trends you've seen in the Baroque music movement over all those decades? There really has been a big arc of change.
When I started playing harpsichord, the harpsichord with the 16-foot and the pedals was the normal harpsichord. Even Leonhard at that point played on such an instrument. And there are many recordings where he performed as well as a basso continuo player on a Neupert instrument. And so the new thing was the the instrument copying the historical harpsichord to modern times. And people like Skowronek, and here in Germany, in America, Dowd and Hubbard did that. And it was a real new thing. I remember in the conservatory, the first year when I was there, we certainly had a new harpsichord in that style. And replacing an instrument which was already more in that style, but not enough. Mm-hmm. And so it was an interesting thing to see that. And with the Baroque orchestras, in the beginning, we were happy to find anybody to play historical instruments. And not always those were the best musicians, because the best musicians said, how can you live with playing Baroque music? There's no work, people earn very little, and if I'm in a symphony orchestra, we have a regular job, etc. Mm-hmm. Now you see that very good musicians are not wanting to play anymore in a symphony orchestra, but say, if we are playing in a small group with historical instruments, why individual? And the many orchestras with period instruments are performing into the 19th century, some even very far. But my orchestra, Amsterdam Baroque Orchestra, I stop with Haydn, Mozart, because it's a small orchestra. I work with five first violins, and you should know as well, if you want to do early Beethoven, should not be much bigger, but a little bit bigger. Mm-hmm. And the sound of Baroque instruments I like very much. The sound of the classical instruments I like a little bit less. Mm-hmm. So, but what I saw is that, of course, the playing quality became better, technical quality became better and better. Mm-hmm. Still to find people who are musical and have a technical quality, that's still the thing where I aim for. Mm-hmm. That's with modern instruments, that's with Baroque instruments. The quality of playing horn have gone up enormously during the years. The playing of the trumpet has gone up, but still very few can play a second Brandenburg. Mm-hmm. So there's still something to learn, and many trumpets are making so many tricks to survive. And I think it's time to go to a real mouthpiece, a good mouthpiece, to have a good instrument built and get the holes closed and try. And as well, we conductors should be open to accept that they experiment with that, because so often a conductor wants the trumpet is perfect. And of course, I want the trumpet to be perfect as well, but they need to have the time to become perfect. Mm-hmm. So let's rehearse, let's try out, let's be, and I hope as well for the younger generation that they go further than we, that not with the age of mine and with the age of the of my predecessors like Leonard Hanoncourt, who died, Frans Bruggen, that's it, that's the early music renaissance. The renaissance should go on. It means what we did wrong, our next generation should find out, and they should read, and they should not be afraid to read Latin as well, because you have to go to the original source, not to any translation.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, you are, you talk about the quality of performers and whatnot. It sounds that you are a teacher and a mentor, not only in a university setting, but also even in these orchestras that you work with, the kind of bringing people along and informing them. But I am curious very specifically in your role as a teacher and mentor of university, of performers and university students. What do you enjoy about that? What is gratifying? What is most gratifying about that?
Now, the first is I give 15 lectures a year, so I do it at home. So I have so in Holland, students can travel for nothing. Ah. So it's easy. So they come to my place, and all the books, all the instruments there. Mm-hmm. So it's much more easy than to be in such an anonymous place in the university. Mm-hmm. Every time I talk about something which is related to either a style, like vibrato, for instance, what to do, Italian French style, but as well about a composer, about somebody who wrote treatises like Mersenne. And I always bring it in collaboration with what do you do with this when you perform. So that's an important thing what I like. And the other thing is I follow many, I think in America you call it thesis. Huh? So somebody who gets a doctorate at university. In Holland you call it a dissertation. And so that can be anything. It can be up to something where a musician is singing or playing, and we have normally a concert the day before. And then it's the normal defense of your thesis, which is 250 pages written. And that's a big commission judging that. And that can go about anything. I mean, I had just one which is about the harp around the French Revolution time, the changes of the harp, the literature about. I had in the beginning of this year somebody talking about the recorder in Napoli in the 17th, 18th century, So it's very different. I follow a dissertation for medieval music, because in Leiden University there's nobody for medieval music, so I have to do it as well. In the beginning of this year, I had somebody talking about the diary of a bassoon player from Denmark in the beginning of the 19th century, who went with his instrument to travel to play concerts, and the problems he had with pitch as well. The demonstration he had, because he could play a sixth higher than all the others. Mm. And all bassoon players came to see his read and wanted to see what he did. And so it's an interesting document of the time. And she bought an instrument on which she can play this. She had a copy of it, where it's even easier to do it. And it's music still very rarely played. And so it's from early singing, Studios Fantasticus, up to I don't know what. And I'm very interested in those subjects. At the beginning, when the student is starting, I know more about it, or I try to know more. And at some point, the student should know more than me, and then we are winning. And there's somebody coming up, I think just before the summertime, about the cello in Holland and Flanders. We see big celli on paintings from Holland. We see small ones. We see celli with 5 strings. Is it a mistake of the painter? We see celli with 6 strings. Somebody would see a cello, it looks like a gamba. What is it? What is the literature about? It's very new research, and she has a corpus of more than 800 paintings, engravings, where you see the cello. So it's an enormous work. And so she's working already for too many years about it. But I try to follow it, and then I try to be devil's advocate and devil lawyer of the devil, or you call it in America. And I follow the project very well, and I think will be a beautiful and important thesis.
Hmm. There seems to be something about Baroque music. I mean, your enthusiasm and your spark about it obviously is delightful, but there seems to be something about Baroque music that is appealing to people who don't even know anything about music, maybe are not even familiar with the classical music tradition in general. And I'm wondering if you have a sense of why that is. What is it about Baroque music that just kind of reaches out to people, even if they're musical novices?
For me, I would say it's the first emotion. It's a logical emotion. It's not the ivory tower of the 19th century, but it's just emotion as you and me have. Mm-hmm. Next to that, there's rhythm. And I think that's important for a time of jazz music, pop music. And I always make the joke that Baroque and rock is close. But I think rhythm in Baroque music and in rock music is evident. Mm-hmm. And so often we perform Baroque music so intelligent. And if you perform a whole evening with Bach fugue, you have the most magnificent music. But how to bring it to an audience who is open but doesn't know what a fugue is? Just be open, make a varied program, perform, show with body language that you enjoy music. Mm-hmm. And don't do it as an actor who learns to do that. No, do it naturally. Mm-hmm. And I think the natural thing of rock music is what attracts so many people. I'm certain about that. And people hearing for the first time Matthias Passion, they're in love, maybe not with the recitatives, but with some of the arias, with the beautiful choirs, and they let it go, and I think they will be lovers forever. Mm-hmm. But you have to get in.
Yeah, yeah. Do you have favorite pieces by Bach or by any other composers?
Every year, every now and then, it changes. Of course, the major works of Bach I enjoy very much. Next week I'm going to do B minor Mass 5 times, so it's not so bad. Beautiful music, great music. And because I will do a collaboration between the Judith School in New York and the Baroque department of them, and of the Hague Conservatory School, where I was teaching for many years harpsichord. But I mean, think for the Matthias Passion, Aus Liebe. I mean, if you hear that, who is so von Steel that the tears will not come? But as well, on the organ, there are so many beautiful pieces, so many joyful pieces. Play joyful. Yeah. And people will like it. I mean, if you ask me now what cantata I prefer on this moment, it was last week, 127, Herr Jesu Christ, war Mensch und Gott. Now it's 46 because I just performed in London that cantata. I had forgotten it completely. My God, what a beautiful piece. And that's with Bach the whole time. You have it, yeah, your mouth open and say, how is it possible that one person can compose in so little time this great genius music? And I mean, when you hear it, when you perform it, you're flabbergasted.
Well, I am always flabbergasted by your wonderful performances and just so delighted and appreciative that you've made the time to speak with me. Thank you so very much.
Thank you very much.